A brighter day is here. Good morning. May we bring you cheer.
We've got time. We've got tunes. We've got time, tunes, and temperature.
Get up and go. It's today, you know, on KSCO Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Saturday Special. I'm Rebecca Costa, host of The Costa Report here on KSCO every Friday afternoon. And I have the privilege this morning of standing in for your regular host, Michael Zwirling, who at this very moment is sitting on a beach somewhere on the shores of our 50th state, enjoying a beverage with an umbrella in it. While he takes a break, for the next 2 hours, we're going to try and demystify the growing nuclear threat from North Korea.
Morning. Now stay right here on KSCO Radio.
Thank you for joining us this morning. For those of you who listen to the Costa Report, where I don't take phone calls during the first hour, well, as you know, the format for the Saturday Special is different. So we will be taking calls throughout the program. Beginning right now, the number to call is 831-479-1080. And I'll be repeating that number again later in the show. So if you want to talk about North Korea or speak to our guest today, Colonel David S. Maxwell, Assistant Director of the Center for Security Studies at Georgetown University and former member of the National War College, then all you have to do is dial the studio at 831-479-1080. And when you do, you will be greeted by our very talented, exceedingly charming engineer, Matt, who is riding shotgun with me on the program this morning. Now, when I was invited to fill in today, I thought about what you might want to talk about. And I landed on the subject of the growing nuclear threat from North Korea because this isn't just one of those problems that we can wait until it's right at our front door, like, say, the fiscal cliff and maybe sequestration. It's pretty obvious, to me at least, that our leaders in Washington, they don't know how to get out ahead of our problems anymore. And it doesn't matter if we're talking about Social Security and going bankrupt, climate change, immigration, or any of those threats that we already know about. We always seem to be behind the curve these days, and that spells trouble. And the threat from North Korea, which, by the way, you're going to hear a lot more about in the coming months, is no exception. So let's take a moment to just review a few facts. Number one, we know that they have long-range nuclear weaponry. They've demonstrated these missiles for the world to see, so now there's really no more debate over whether they have the technology or not. Number two, the Kim regime has made their military ambitions public and very clear for decades. Number three, we have beaten down their economy to the point that conditions in North Korea are worse than the Soviet Union before the end of the Cold War. And nothing, not even widespread starvation, has slowed down their nuclear ambitions. And that's because they don't have any other product to export to build their economy. And finally, number four, North Korea has been selling arms to Iran since the early 80s when they first reverse engineered the Soviet Scud missiles they got a hold of. So if the United States or Israel has any plans to take out Iran's enrichment facilities, and we don't know. We've got guys like Dennis Ross saying it's going to happen before the end of the year, and then other people say no. All Iran's got to do is make one phone call to start buying parts. In other words, it would be so easy to turn Iran into a customer for North Korea, but, you know, that's just the way I see it. But in order to really understand whether North Korea is just saber-rattling again or we're entering some kind of more dangerous period, we really need to look at the history of the Kim regime. And we're fortunate to have an expert with us this morning. Colonel David S. Maxwell is on the line with us, and he's one of the most respected experts on the Kim regime. So, Colonel, welcome to the program. We're so lucky to have you available this morning. Colonel, I don't hear you on the line. Let's see here. Colonel? Colonel Maxwell. Okay, let's see here. Colonel Maxwell?
Can you hear me now?
Oh, yeah, there we go. There we go.
Okay.
I don't
I'm not sure what the,
I'm not sure what it was either, but you know what? Since I am sitting in for the host, let me take the responsibility for that, and let's just call it operator error. Good old-fashioned operator error. I like that. So, Colonel, so welcome to the program. Based on the Kim regime's history, is there any reason that we should feel a little more concerned today than, say, 5 or 10 years ago?
Yes, I think we should. And I must say, your opening introduction was certainly on the mark. And so I hopefully I'll build on that for you. But yes, I think we should be more concerned. On the one hand, we're seeing a continued pattern of rhetoric and provocations and their continued strategy that they've been executing for the last 60 years. You know, however, we have Kim Jong-un, the new leader, just a little over a year in power. And I think that with him in the leadership position, it's much different than his father, Kim Jong-il, or his grandfather, Kim Il-sung. And so I think we are entering a time that is potentially could bring us to some form of conflict at a higher possibility than in the recent past.
What's the difference that you see with the newest leader? You say that you see some differences. Specifically, what differences disturb you the most?
Well, the fact that he's young, and I'm afraid that the fact that he has some Western education, his time in Europe, and I think, you know, and this is just my speculation, I think we'd have to ask Dennis Rodman for his personal views, but I think that he has a level of arrogance because of his Western education, and maybe that's not the right word, but I think he thinks that he can deal in the international world because he has his European education. And I fear that combine that with his inexperience and then listening to his military advisors, I'm afraid that he's going to miscalculate. And the reason that I say that is that he does not have the experience that his father or grandfather had. And when his father, Kim Jong-il, was designated in 1973 to be the successor, he had 21 years to be tutored by his father. Kim Jong-un has not had that had that luxury, and I fear that his inexperience, his potential hubris, and poor advice that he's going to get from his military leaders really creates a potential for a perfect storm.
Well, it seems that he's, what do I want to say, a little bolder. Is that the right word?
Yes, I think that he has, although everything that we're seeing is a continued pattern where they conduct provocations to gain political and economic concessions. Now, they will ratchet up the tensions. They will bring us or the international community to the table. We make agreements because no one wants war. No one wants regime collapse. And so he will get political and economic concessions, and then he will, and the regime will then break their agreements, you know, retrench, and then start all over. And that's been the cycle of provocations and blackmail diplomacy really for the last 60 years. The problem is now that I think conditions have radically changed for the North, particularly since 2010 and the sinking of the Chonan, the artillery shelling of Waipido, the island in South Korea, and the killing of South Korean civilians. I think that the North expects that the South Koreans will not react, and they expect that the United States and international community will again give in to their blackmail diplomacy, and I do not think that that is going to happen this time.
But on the other hand, you've made a very interesting statement, which just actually haunted me. You said that the United States will not attack any country that has nuclear weapons.
Yes, well, I actually
and you know, or something along those lines. And I, you know, what troubles me about that is if that is true, and it's known that if you have nuclear weapons, we're not likely to attack you. Aren't we kind of giving a message that everybody better rush out and get some?
Well, I think that that is. I didn't make that statement that we would not, but I believe that that is what North Korea believes. They believe that we will not attack another nuclear power. And I think that that is part of their calculus in why they have pursued nuclear weapons, really going back to the 1950s. I mean,
so as long as you have nuclear weapons, you could do whatever you want, and the U.S. isn't going to strike because they don't want to light that fuse for a nuclear confrontation.
Right, and that is what the way North Korea looks at it, in particular when they look at what happened in Libya, in Iraq, and the way that we have conducted our operations to be able to ensure that these countries don't get nuclear weapons. And, you know, we acted before we thought that the Saddam regime would get nuclear weapons. You know, Libya gave up their nuclear weapons, but look what happened to Gaddafi. And North Korea looks at that and says that Gaddafi negotiated with the United States, and then now he's out of power. And that, of course, goes against the one vital national interest of North Korea, which is survival of the Kim family regime. That is their vital national interest, and everything they do is designed to ensure survival of the regime.
So is this a case of a little change up of he who holds the gold makes the rules? This is he who holds the nuclear weapons makes the rules. I mean, isn't there some truth to that? If you do have nuclear weapons, we're going to be very reluctant to have any military action against you. I mean, isn't there a truth to that?
Well, no, I think, I think that in the case of North Korea, they may have a handful of nuclear weapons, but even to this day, I think everybody listening would agree that there's no way North Korea could win a nuclear war. And in fact, in 1997, when Hwang Jong-yap, who is the highest-ranking North Korean defector and the father of their Juche ideology, their ideology of self-reliance, when he defected, we asked him, why has North Korea invested all this money in their military capabilities, but they have never again attacked the South to try to unify the peninsula according to their goals? And he looked at us and he said, basically, are you crazy? He said, it's American nuclear weapons that deter us from acting. He said, we cannot win a nuclear war. And there is the paradox, because our nuclear weapons do deter the North from acting, but yet they believe that they must have nuclear weapons in order to deter us from attacking. The problem is that this is not the same kind of deterrence that existed during the Cold War between the United States and the Soviet Union, the former Soviet Union. And North Korea still cannot win a nuclear war, but yet they are able to play a game of poker with their pair of twos and continually win the hand in their game of blackmail diplomacy, because we don't want them to possess nuclear weapons. Now they have proven that they've developed a capability, though limited, and they believe that we will do anything to negotiate with them to try to prevent their further development. And I think while we might negotiate, they will never, ever give up their pursuit of nuclear weapons, because they deem it in their vital interest, both for deterrence, for survival, as well as a blackmail tool, and, as you've mentioned, as a moneymaker, because I believe that they will sell their nuclear technology and likely have shared it with Iran.
Let's talk about these public product demonstrations, because I've often said that to me it's no different than Steve Jobs when he used to stand on a stage at the Comdex trade show and demonstrate Apple's latest offering. I mean, aren't they just drumming up business?
I think that's exactly right. And in fact, this last test in a book that's going to be coming out by Professor Bruce Bechtel, who's written a number of important books on North Korea. In his analysis, and based on his reporting, the Iranians observed this last nuclear test, and they may have paid tens of millions of dollars just to be able to observe and monitor these tests, not only the nuclear tests, but also their missile tests. And so there is a relationship between North Korea and Iran, and I truly believe that North Korea will proliferate their missile and nuclear technology to Iran.
Well, I think you and I both agree on that. I don't see that they have very many other choice exports to deliver in exchange for currency. Now, we have to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll be talking a little bit more about something that you mentioned earlier, this blackmail diplomacy. I love the way that you put those words together, but I don't completely understand it. So I hope we can talk a little bit more about that. We're going to take a short break. You're listening to the Saturday Special, and I'm Rebecca Costa filling in for MZ.
Hi, I'm Andy, the produce manager at Ben Lomond Market. This week, we are featuring large tomatoes from Mexico, 99 cents a pound, and from Washington, small Fuji apples, 99 cents a pound. Also, from Chile, we have red plums, $1.98 a pound, and red or green seedless grapes, $2.69 a pound. From California, we have red leaf or green leaf lettuce, 99 cents each, and 3-pound bag cutie tangerines, $3.99 each. The artichoke season is starting up, and we have fresh-picked, local-grown, large artichokes, 2 for $5. These artichokes are eating great. In organics, we are featuring cameo apples, 99 cents a pound, and 1-pound clamshell strawberries, $4.99 each. So come, check out our great selection of fresh produce at Ben Lomond Market.
If electricity flows through it, you can save a lot of money by doing it yourself with the help of the experts at Santa Cruz Electronics. Hello, Charlie Friedman here. Listen to the things your friends and neighbors are doing for themselves with the help of Santa Cruz Electronics.
Microwave repair.
Robotic arm with controller for eShed industrial arm.
Tesla coil for my rail gun.
Dead tricks upgrades.
Drive for a telescope.
A tube amp for my guitar.
Submersible sensors for NASA.
Ethernet cable for my new iMac.
Solar powered gate.
Instrument panel for an airplane.
Wiring my hot rod.
Upgrading PC system.
Help with home wiring.
Custom audio cables for recording studio.
High voltage electronic ignition circuit.
Building a spaceship.
If electricity flows through it, you can save a lot of money by doing it yourself with the help of the experts at Santa Cruz Electronics. Voted best electronics store 2 years running. Call Santa Cruz Electronics today at 831-479-5444 or visit at 2808 SoCal Avenue in Santa Cruz. Do it yourself and save money with the help of Santa Cruz Electronics.
There are a lot of ways to buy and sell property these days, but there is one way to buy and sell that is both profitable and fun. Slawinski Auction Company, a family-owned business for over 4 decades, has been in business and buying and selling property including antiques, real estate, business liquidation, and benefit auctions. In doing so, they've developed a large base of willing buyers and sellers throughout the Central Coast and around the world. You owe it to yourself to get the most profit out of your property. See how much you can get through an auction. Simply contact Slawinski Auction Company. Slawinski Auction Company offers free appraisal service on Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. located at 1500 Green Hill Road in Scotts Valley. Slawinski Auction Company will make certain your property is sold for the maximum price. Find out what it's worth today by calling Slawinski Auction Company at 831-335-9000 or visit us online at www.slawinski.com.
From Capitola to Carmel, Red Hot News Talk, AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz.
Welcome back to the Saturday Special. I'm Rebecca Costa, and I'm filling in for your regular host, MZ. And we have David S. Maxwell, who is an expert, and I want to say that is one of our country's foremost experts on the Kim regime in North Korea. Thank you so much for being with us today. Now you have described something called blackmail diplomacy, and blackmail to me is, you know, some Hollywood star's got sex tapes and somebody says, I'll give me money and I won't release them to the press. But I'm confused about what the blackmail is here.
Well, I think the blackmail is the fact when North Korea conducts a provocation, they ratchet up tensions, and they believe that as they ratchet up tensions, both South Korea, the United States, and really the international community does not want conflict, does not want these tensions to be raised, and that we will come to the table to negotiate, and we will make political and economic concessions. Just go back to the largest one, 1994, and the agreed framework. As North Korea was developing their nuclear capabilities in 1993 and 1994. Tensions were raised, sabers were rattled, but in the end, following Jimmy Carter's visit, meeting Kim Il-sung, then he died, and then in October of 1994, we had the agreed framework where the United States provided every year 500,000 tons of heavy fuel oil, and also an international consortium was established to build light water nuclear reactors to provide nuclear power. So,
in exchange for what, though? This is where I'm having trouble. What did we get? Yeah. For coming to the table with those accessions, because that's what blackmail is all about. You get something back. So this is where I kind of drop off a cliff here. They want economic, they do a bunch of saber rattling. They want economic concessions. We come to the table, we give them the concessions, and what do we get? Are they going to stop their nuclear program? They're not going to sell nuclear arms? I mean, what did we walk away with?
In 1994, we thought we walked away with the fact that they were going to cease their nuclear program.
But they didn't do that.
They have not done that, and they have never done that. We have, in 2007, we removed them from the terrorist watch list. We thought that they were going to continue on this process of verifiable nuclear reductions, and they did not. You know, so. Yeah, we make these agreements, and they break every agreement. And the things that we get in return are really nothing more than promises. We provide political and economic concessions in return for promises that they later break, because they know, and rightly so, that we want to come to a diplomatic conclusion that will be, in our interests, and we think that. We're being able to make conduct negotiations in accordance with international standards, and North Korea does not operate that way. So they blackmail us with their threats, with their increase in tension. They make promises, we give concessions, and then they break them.
So this is a kidnapper who just keeps coming back for more and more money and never returns the person.
That is an excellent analogy. Yes, that is.
So you just keep paying and paying, and the person never shows up and never gets on the phone. We've all seen these movies. I mean, sooner or later, it has to come to some climax. I mean, you have to have some showdown, right?
Yes, and however, none of the international the major players in the international community, China, the U.S., Japan, South Korea, Russia, none of them want that showdown because, as you know, the North Korean military capability, although as obsolete as it is, there is the saying, quantity has a quality all its own. They have a military capability that will inflict tremendous suffering and damage, particularly on South Korea. They'll never win a war, but we don't want to see that happen.
Does South Korea want that showdown?
No. No one wants the showdown. In fact, China's policy is what is called the three no's. No war, no collapse, and no nukes. And as far as they're pretty good baseball players because they're batting about 600. There has been no war and no collapse, but they haven't been successful in the no nuke. So they're about
600. Well, that's another thing that bothers me. I mean, clearly with all these economic embargoes, China has been the lifeline to North Korea. We can agree on that, and that because exports and imports are coming in through China. We could trace that. So if they were so hell-bent on, you know, they didn't want that nuclear program to proliferate in North Korea, why didn't they crack down earlier? Because it's almost like they're trying to put a lid on the box now.
Well, it is. The three no's, no war and no collapse, two out of the three are more important than the third. China can live with a nuclear North Korea. A nuclear North Korea is not a threat to China, but they cannot accept war, and collapse will be such a huge burden on China that they don't want to see that. And so China over the years has really, I've called them kind of a barometer. And as international aid going into North Korea, food aid, fuel aid, as that has declined, China has increased theirs just to keep it balanced. And I look at North Korea as a drowning child, and China will throw it the life ring, but it will not reel it into shore and save it. It's really just keeping North Korea its head above water. It does not want it to get too strong so that it would attack, and it does not want it to collapse. Having nuclear weapons, they would like them not to have nuclear weapons, but they cannot prevent it. Although, and this is where conditions are really, at this time, why I'm so concerned, because China, the United States, and South Korea are kind of aligning right now to do something that is completely different against North Korea that that may cause miscalculation by Kim Jong-un. And one thing to keep in mind is with the UN Security Council resolutions, of course, China did agree and support them. But an interesting fact is that in February, China cut off the flow of crude oil to North Korea, mm-hmm. which they have never done for more than 3 days in the past. And so the month of February, they did not ship crude oil to North Korea. And, of course, China is the only source of crude oil for North Korea. And that is significant. I mean, they certainly have signaled their displeasure. The recent statement by Xi Jinping has said that they are friendly neighbors, when in the past the standard terminology was that North Korea and China were closer than lips and teeth, and now they are only friendly neighbors. So China has put a different kind of pressure on the North than they have in the past, and combined with the potential actions by South Korea and the United States in the upcoming, the upcoming friction here, I think we're going to see some different things, and that's why I'm worried, because Kim Jong-un just does not have the experience to deal with this.
I think you're making all of us come to a realization that we've got a different situation here. We may have a adolescent making very, very dangerous decisions. What about these theorists who claim that North Korea could very well suck the United States and China into a nuclear Armageddon? We've seen a lot of articles come out of particularly London and Europe saying that that may very well be North Korea's long-term ambition.
Yeah, of course, don't know and can't say for sure what is happening and what the regime is really thinking about. I do go back to the idea, though, that their vital national interest is survival of the regime, and I don't see them as trying to start a nuclear Armageddon between China and the United States. I don't see that guarantees their survival. Anything could happen. I really believe what North Korea is trying to do right now is they are going to conduct another provocation against South Korea to increase tensions. We've already heard some speculation that that North Korea is planning a fourth nuclear test. And what I think they're trying to do is they're trying to sell us that test. And what I mean by that is that after they conduct another provocation against the South, tensions will be so high that they believe that the United States will want to negotiate to prevent a fourth nuclear test and that we will make those political and economic concessions. And the irony is they don't need to conduct a fourth nuclear test right now. So they would be trying to sell us something that, you know, really they're not going to even do. And we would pay for them not conducting a test. And the problem with that is I do not think the conditions have changed. If they conduct a provocation, I think South Korea will respond militarily and decisively, hopefully at the point of provocation. And I don't think that the United States will give in this time to their blackmail diplomacy.
But what happens if we go back and we say, go ahead and run all the tests you want? We don't care. Tests you want because we're all done. You know, we've come to the table. We've made concessions. You haven't made good on any of the things that you said you would. This is just blackmail and extortion. And you're never going to make good on your commitments. So we're all done with that. Go ahead, run all the tests you want, make all the noise you want. We're not interested. What happens then?
Well, actually, what you've described is an important course of action. And what that is to attack their strategy. you know, Sun Tzu, the great theorist and Chinese
wrote The Art of War.
Mm-hmm. The Art of War, and he said that you know, we all know that it's the acme of skill to win without fighting, but one of the important things that he said is that it is really most important to attack the enemy's strategy. And what we need to do is to attack their strategy. And you just said that you call their bluff, and we need to expose their strategy. And that's why I'm happy that you're talking about this, because we need to try to understand what North Korea is doing, what their strategy is, and then we need to attack that strategy. We don't need to physically attack North Korea. We need to attack their strategy. And I think that it's important that we understand part of their strategy, as I've outlined, is they're not going to negotiate in good faith in accordance with international standards, and we need to call attention to that. And it is difficult for our diplomats to do that, because, you know, they are rightly hardwired to try to negotiate with anybody to try to achieve our interests. But
well, of
North
course,
Korea
when you,
is not like anybody else.
When you call a bluff, look, one of two things is going to happen, right? I mean, on the one hand, you could say, well, go ahead and run all the tests you want, and we don't care. More tests aren't going to do anything. We already know you've got the nuclear weapons, so why do we care? And you never make good on any of your promises, so we're all done here. And so on the one hand, you're basically saying you're not relevant. We're going to ignore you. You don't have any crude oil coming in. Pretty much it's a matter of time before your economy is so decimated you don't even have the materials or the labor to put together any kind of a constructive threat. We're just basically going to keep starving the country until you don't have any materials to build anything with, and you can't conduct any more tests. Okay, we could go there. But on the other hand, that economy and that regime is so desperate that they may look at this as an existential threat. And that, when you back people into a corner like that, there's no telling what happens.
You're exactly right. And that is the dilemma that we have right now, because what you have described is a strangulation strategy. And to do that, you would really need to increase the Proliferation Security Initiative. You would need to take down their global illicit network that's trading in drugs and counterfeit money and cigarettes, you know, that's bringing in hard currency to the regime. That would be the strangulation strategy. And there is the paradox. To do that, we haven't talked about this, but if we go back to their strategy, their vital national interest being survival of the regime, and you said it, if we strangle them, that's a threat to the regime, an existential threat. And then we are faced with the problem that, faced with regime collapse, they may only have one course of action left, which is to execute their campaign plan to try to unify the peninsula under their control, which in their calculus would be to ensure survival of the regime with a unified Korea under North Korean domination, which we know is not likely. And this is the paradox and why China's strategy or policy of three no's, no war and no collapse in particular, is so important, because if they collapse, before they collapse, it could lead to conflict as they not lash out as a dying animal, but as a deliberate decision to try to execute their campaign plan, and then we have war. And so this is how we are, we are really stuck. North Korea is stuck between a rock and a hard place, but so is the international community. And it is all the result of the way North Korea has developed as a nation, starting with Kim Il-sung and passed down through Kim Jong-il and Kim Jong-un. It is a result of the establishment of North Korea in the political system that it has, and there's no real easy way out of this.
Well, we have to take a short break, but as usual, technology may very well have the answer. We've now got folks making regular cyber attacks. And as we all know, these nuclear missiles and the enrichment facilities and everything else, from our cell phones to everything else, is all dependent on the internet. So maybe the cyber attacks are some kind of solution. We'll talk about that when we come back. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Renting quality agriculture equipment from RDO Equipment Company is an excellent way for you to try a new John Deere tractor. Stop in today to take advantage of pre-season specials. John Deere 6330 mudders as low as $1,400 per month, and John Deere 7130 MFWD row crop tractors as low as $1,600. Hurry in to save big. This offer ends April 1st, 2013. Did you know that rental charges can be applied to the purchase of your tractor? Stop in to your local RDO Equipment Company store in Salinas or Watsonville for more information. Limited supply available.
At Dominican Hospital, our orthopedic specialists are dedicated to one thing, getting you moving again pain-free. Whether you're planning to hike the Skyline Trail or just need to bend down to tie your old running shoes, we're ready with the latest medical techniques and specialty care to make that happen. Let's talk about helping you be your best. Visit www.dominicanfacts.com to learn about our free joint pain seminar. Dominican Hospital Orthopedic Services. Move the way you were meant to.
For many families, going out for Easter brunch is as big a part of the celebration as Easter baskets and the Easter bunny. Join us this Easter at Severino's Bar and Grill and indulge in a stunning array of the freshest foods with our special Easter champagne brunch from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Our chef is preparing a feast complete with scrumptious seafood, a carving station with Angus prime rib and honey glazed ham, traditional eggs benedict, an omelet station, and a grand assortment of Easter favorites. Only $33 for adults, $16 for children 10 and under. Reservations are limited, so call today, 831-688-8987. Severino's Bar and Grill this Easter.
Relax. You can't afford to negotiate court procedures and prepare court documents with the help of Angel Hess, a legal document assistant and a notary public with over 20 years' experience in helping attorneys and people just like you save lots of money while negotiating the legal system. With Angel Hess's help, you can afford to prepare complaints, summons, answers and discovery, uncontested probates, wills, and powers of attorney. You can afford to file unlawful detainer actions, dissolve a marriage, and modify support or child custody.
Hello, I'm Angel Hess. I am not an attorney and cannot give you legal advice or represent you in court. However, I can save you a lot of time and money by providing you with professionally prepared documents for your day in court. Listen.
My name is Jessie Kapp, and she was a tremendous help in every way. She was professional, courteous, fast. I would definitely recommend Angel to anyone.
Angel Hess is bonded and registered with the County of Santa Cruz and a proud member of the Santa Cruz County Bar Association and Think Local First. Save time, save money, save peace of mind. Call on the Angel, Angel Hess. 831-426-8536. 426-8536.
From Positiepo to Pebble Beach, Red Hot News Talk, AM 1080, KSCO Santa Cruz.
Welcome back to the Saturday special. I'm Rebecca Costa, and I'm filling in for MZ, who is in Hawaii somewhere, floating on a blow-up raft and having a good old time. I hope that's the case. The fact that he hasn't called into the program indicates to me that he might actually be taking his vacation seriously. We are here today with David S. Maxwell, expert on the North Korean Kim regime. You know, we recently had reports that South Korea's internet and television services and banking were shut down by a group of cyber hackers, and it was speculated that these were North Korean cyber hackers. And of course, we've had the recent unfortunate discovery that cyber hacking teams were being employed and coordinated by the Chinese military. How do you feel about that? What role does this play?
Well, I think that there is. Cyber is an important aspect of the future. I mean, we're so dependent on it, and it is so important to us, and it also makes us vulnerable. North Korea, I think, is developing a cyber capability, as is China, and we of course don't know if North Korea was responsible for the activities in South Korea. I think it's very possible, very likely. Some of the reports we're seeing today, now the IP addresses were not China, but actually one was in South Korea. But that does not rule out the possibility that it was North Korea's cyber hackers that executed this. But I think cyber is very important, and I look back to 1999 and the two Chinese colonels who wrote the book Unrestricted Warfare. I think that a lot of people read that, and a lot of people, our adversaries, say that it is a viable means of warfare to attack financial systems, attack our electronic infrastructure, And I think that that is a very serious form of conflict and something I worry about for the future.
Isn't that a way, though, that we could shut down a nuclear threat? I mean, if you just shut down an ability for those systems to operate, I mean, flat out, they're all dependent on networking.
Yes, although I you know, North Korea is a pretty you know, closed system, and some of their we know that their missiles actually you know, are actually quite crude, and I don't think that they're as dependent as on the infrastructure as a more developed country. Although I think you bring up a great point, because as North Korea becomes more wired and more connected to the outside world, as well as more dependent on that advanced technology, it potentially will open up vulnerabilities in their system that can be exploited. But we have seen it over the years how they have tried to harden their communication system, going from radio broadcast to buried underground fiber optic cable to protect their communications from being destroyed either kinetically or through electronic attack. But I think that, like everyone else, they will become more and more dependent on the internet. Especially their scientists realize that they need those capabilities, and that could be the vulnerability that allows us or someone to be able to attack their infrastructure.
Yeah, it seems to me that, you know, you've got these groups like Anonymous that can get right into the Pentagon and the State Department and get at whatever documents they want. What is our intelligence people doing? They ought to just go out and hire these guys and say, get on in there and shut down their programs. You know, send a virus on over and eliminate their nuclear records. I mean, we can set back a whole nuclear program. We can set back a whole enrichment facility without ever firing off a single bomb, can't we?
I'm sure that people are working on that.
That's what I'm worried about. I'm worried that nobody's working on that. I'm worried that we're going back to the table and we're saying, well, what will you do? We'll give on the economic concessions. Here we are again. What promises will you make? And instead, how about we go back like the Ronald Reagan strategy? You know, we're building a Star Wars system. We can't show it to you, well, but we have it. You know, I love that. You want to talk about a bluff. We had very little in place. Let's be honest about it. I mean, you know, we're going to build it. Yeah. And we had a lot of debate among scientists about how that was really going to come about and how accurate it was going to be. But it really sounded scary.
And I think we're coming up on the anniversary of Ronald Reagan's Star Wars speech.
Right. We need a speech like that to say, listen, we don't care what you build. We don't care how many tests you run. We can shut you down at a moment's notice because you are dependent on basic electricity and computing infrastructure. And we are already in your facility. You don't even know it.
Yeah. You do bring up another point that we haven't touched on. One of North Korea's strategy is to try to split the South Korean and U.S. alliance. And if you follow the military developments on the peninsula since Jimmy Carter tried to remove all U.S. forces in 1978, there has been a gradual reduction of U.S. forces on the Korean Peninsula. And the North's provocation, in addition to the blackmail diplomacy that I've talked about, they are also have continuously tried to drive a wedge between South Korea and the United States. And the reason for that is they want U.S. forces off the peninsula so that they will have the balance of military power to be able to defeat South Korea in a war. And so,
and we've cooperated with that. We've made them feel insecure by withdrawing our support.
Yes, so we've had, in 2004, we withdrew an entire brigade from the 2nd Infantry Division. And George W. Bush, H.W. Bush in his administration withdrew tactical nuclear weapons. We've stopped Team Spirit during Bill Clinton's time, the largest exercise in the free world that was really considered a direct threat to the North. And we've gradually withdrawn forces. And now, in 2015, we are going to dissolve the Iraq-U.S. Combined Forces Command, the Combined Warfighting Command that is responsible for deterring North Korea and defending against an attack by North Korea. It's called the OPCON transfer, but it's really dissolving the Combined Forces Command. And from a North Korean perspective, their strategy has been working for decades as they chip away at the alliance and they try to split the alliance. And I say that because one of the things to do to prevent the cycle of provocations and to attack their strategy is to stop that reduction of the perceived reduction by North Korea of a of the U.S. commitment to South Korea. And we should stop the dissolution of the Combined Forces Command. We should return U.S. forces that were removed, a helicopter battalion and the like, that were removed during the war on terrorism. And we need to strengthen our commitment to the point, even where we have U.S. forces side by side with South Korean forces conducting combat patrols on the DMZ, another thing that we stopped doing during the Clinton administration. There are no U.S. forces on the demilitarized zone conducting combat patrols as we did up until the mid-1990s when Bill Clinton stopped that.
So what we see here is a typical cause and effect. We start withdrawing military troops, joint combat missions, things like that. We start cutting down on that, and the saber rattling gets louder. The demonstrations of the nuclear weapons gets to be more frequent and more flamboyant. And why can't we figure out there's a relationship between those two things? That doesn't seem like that's that hard.
Well, I think that the one thing, North Korea has a 60-year perspective, and they do look long-term, and they look both long-term forward, and they look at the past and look at how we've reacted. We have a very short-term memory to everything, and you know, we can't think more than 2-4 you know, maybe 6 years ahead, but really about 4 years.
Oh, you're being generous there. You're being very generous. 2-4, 6 years ahead? We just got done kicking the fiscal cliff can 90 days ahead, and we felt good about that.
You're right. You're right. we are too short-sighted, and we don't look at the pattern that we have created, and we don't look at the future, you know, and how that pattern may continue, and how can we stop that? And I think that the one thing we should understand, the thing that deters North Korea the most, from a military perspective, is military power. And that has to be demonstrated. And I think the B-52 overflights this week made much more of an impact on North Korea than putting interceptors in Alaska or putting defensive capabilities anywhere. It is the offensive military power that really demonstrates to North Korea that we mean what we say.
So what do we need? Do we need to line up tanks and have a indisputable show of force at the border? I mean, just start moving troops and everybody right there to the border and you know, because look, we have participated in making South Korea feel insecure. They have a right to feel insecure. And by the way, my recent book is out in South Korea, and I get more emails from South Koreans that are saying, look, I mean, why is America ignoring us? Why have they abandoned us? That's the feeling there of the civilians in South Korea. They are terrified.
Well, and, you know, there's, I mean, that's a whole other issue that is really worth discussing. But, you know, the 10 years of the Sunshine Policy from 1997 to 2007, where South Korea really tried to engage North Korea, provided unrestricted aid, you know, without reciprocity. But during that time, there was a rising amount of anti-American sentiment during the Kim Dae-jung and Noh Myo-hoon administration, combined with, you know, the tragic incident of Highway 56, the killing of the accidental killing of two young girls on their way to school.
Yes.
And there was a rising anti-American sentiment. And at that time, you know, that contributed to decisions on our part to execute the transformation, the OPCON transfer, the dissolution of the Combined Forces Command, withdraw U.S. forces, you know, in response to what was perceived to be the rising anti-American sentiment. And so we had a combination there that, you know, where there was a feeling with the so-called 386 generation of South Koreans that were more progressive and did not value the alliance. And that led to this decision to try to change the relationship of the military alliance. Now, I think that has subsided, and that, you know, smart South Koreans know that the key to anything is the alliance between South Korea and the United States. And the alliance, and I do believe that that the alliance is really the center of gravity for the outcome of what happens on the Korean Peninsula. And I think we should remember what President Obama and President Lee said in 2009 for the ultimate end state for the Korean Peninsula, and that is the reunification. The unification of the Korean Peninsula under South Korean control. And that is the vision of both our countries. And hopefully when the new President Park comes to visit in May, that she and President Obama will reaffirm that vision, because in the end, it is a unified Korean Peninsula that is going to bring stability to Northeast Asia. And that's really what we've got to work for in the long term.
You know, you're absolutely right. This cannot be allowed to continue. And I think everybody understands it. It's just a powder keg waiting to happen. And when I'm in South Korea, I have to say I visit there very often. And I have to say that living under a threat like that, that is that close, would be like somebody having nuclear weapons in Tijuana. I mean, for people that, you know, just say, well, so what? Why don't they just get on with the business of getting on with the business? I don't think we would stand for a moment that we would have missiles aimed at us from Tijuana. I mean, and that is a situation South Korea has been living with. So I do want to, you know, try to bring it home so that we can understand a little bit better. Well, Colonel, that's all the time we have this hour. But before we let you go, I want to thank you for taking time to be with us this morning and really just kind of laying it out the way that it really is and not the way the media has been portraying it. And I hope that you'll come back and join us again soon.
Well, I'd be happy to. It was an honor and a pleasure. And thank you for looking at this critically important subject.
Thank you so much. And we're going to take a short break so we can bring you news and traffic, and then we'll be right back to take your calls. If you have been patiently waiting to talk to me about my conversation with MZ about gun control, I know I really whooped up the audience a couple of weeks ago, and some of you were pretty annoyed with me. You can call in on the second hour at 831-479-1080. I would love to take your calls. I know many of you would like to talk to me about the Second Amendment and whether I had it right or wrong, and we can certainly discuss that as well as talk about North Korea. And like I said, you're going to hear a lot more about that in the coming days. This is not something that's going to go away anytime soon. And I want people to really be aware that we're trying to get out ahead of the ball here, right? I know media doesn't usually do that. We're just a reactive kind of medium. Something happens and we report what happens, and then we get everybody all whipped up about how to fix it after it's already occurred. But that's kind of like a post-mortem. You know, the patient's already dead. You cut them open, you find out what they died of, but they're already dead. I don't think that's very useful. You know what's useful? Here's what's useful, a pre-mortem. To ask ourselves, if the patient was going to die, what would they die from? Now, there's something that's helpful. Now, I'm Rebecca Costa, and I have to tell you, I am delighted to be sitting in for MZ on the Saturday special. And in just a few minutes, you're going to have the pleasure of hearing from Rick, who's been riding shotgun with me. He's going to give you the local news and traffic, and you're going to get the national news at the top of the hour. If you want to get in on the second hour, and I do want to hear from you, 831-479-1080, tell me what's on your mind. And if that line's busy, call it again, 831-479-1080. Look forward to getting your call. And I am Rebecca Costa, host of the Costa Report, sitting in for MZ on the Saturday special. Now, here's the news.
KSCO, Santa Cruz.
CBS News, I'm Pam Coulter. The future of gay marriage is in the hands of the Supreme Court next week. The justices hear arguments in two cases, California's Proposition 8, which defines marriage as the union of a man and a woman, and the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. NYU constitutional law expert Kenji Yoshino on what's at stake.
Can you say that you're treating gay couples fairly if you're denying them access to marriage? And then second, a fundamental right to marriage claim, which is to say, shouldn't all Americans have the right to marry the person that they love?
They had to pull an all-nighter, but members of the Senate approved the first budget plan in 4 years, GOP leader Mitch McConnell.
I know everyone is exhausted, and you may not feel it at the moment, but this is one of the Senate's finest days in recent years, and I commend everyone who's participated in this extraordinary debate.
The White House issued a statement saying the Senate plan will create jobs and cut the deficit in a balanced way. The calendar says spring, but it seems like winter in Colorado.
This spring storm blanket in Colorado comes after a warm week when almost all the winter snow in Denver had melted. Now deep drifts cover the lawns. Streets are snow-packed with some highways closed. Interstate 70 has been shut down east of Denver into Kansas. West of Denver, drivers slowly head to the mountains where the snow is welcomed by springtime skiers and snowboarders. March is historically a snowy month in Colorado with at least one big blast of wintry weather. Lee Frank, CBS News, Denver.
Storm was also expected to drop up to 8 inches of snow in the Midwest this weekend. Street markets are crowded in the Cyprian capital of Nicosia today, with many buying cheap produce to get them through the next few days of a financial crisis. Efforts to get a bailout deal for Cyprus continue. Congressional Republicans have repeatedly tried to repeal it, but the president's landmark health reform law is celebrating its third anniversary.
We are done. President Obama noted the history in signing the health reform law, meeting a goal set more than 100 years before by President Teddy Roosevelt.
The core principle that everybody should have some basic security when it comes to their health care.
Millions of Americans have been able to get or keep health insurance because of the protections in the law, and at the end of this year, exchanges will be set up in every state, and those without insurance will have to buy it with government subsidies if they need them. Bob Fuzz, CBS News, Washington.
Russian news agencies are reporting the death of Russian tycoon Boris Berezovsky in London. The 67-year-old Berezovsky had been a Kremlin insider, but became one of Vladimir Putin's fiercest critics. Pope Francis made the trip to Castel Gandolfo today to have lunch with his predecessor, Benedict. This kind of meeting hasn't happened in centuries. The Vatican says the two popes embraced, with the reigning pope saying, "We are brothers." This is CBS News.
This is the story of three little pigs in today's economy. The first little pig built his house of stocks, bonds, and insurance, and then saw it blow away with the first winds of economic change. The second little pig built his financial future on real estate, but when the housing bubble burst, so did his financial house. The third little pig built his house with American Bullion, the trusted name in 401k rollovers and IRA transfers. That little piggy discovered the security, safety, and stability that comes with American Bullion and their first-class customer service. And unlike other gold companies, American Bullion handles all the paperwork, hassle-free and tax-free. Call 1-800-678-6923 now and see how simple working with American Bullion can be. And when you call 1-800-678-6923, you'll receive your own gold guide and the book, The Next Wave, absolutely free. So call 1-800-678-6923 now and discover American Bullion. Peace of gold, peace of mind. Call now.
No flight attendants around, but you can get served a soft drink in a New Orleans cab.
So sitting here in the back of the cab, I have a touch screen that says, please choose your drink. And if you push that button, it walks you through the steps of selecting what kind of soft drink you want and how to pay the 99 cents with your credit or debit card. And then just over my shoulder, the soft drink pops up from out of the trunk into the back seat of the cab. People who have seen the system in action think it's a pretty nice feature.
Pretty impressive. Innovative. Never seen anything like it.
Pretty reasonable, too, isn't it?
They're expanding this service to New York and Chicago soon. In the back of a taxi, Dave Cohen for CBS News, New Orleans.
A former live-in caretaker at a Pittsburgh-area mansion is facing a pretty big bar tab. Authorities say John Saunders drank 52 bottles of the homeowner's well-aged whiskey worth about $100,000. Patricia Hill recently discovered 4 of the 9 cases of whiskey hidden in the mansion were empty. Pam Coulter, CBS News.
It's 11:05 on this Saturday morning. You're listening to AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz, online at KSCO.com. I'm Rick O'Shea with a King of the Hill traffic update. Northbound and southbound 1 moving nicely in the Santa Cruz and Monterey County areas. Had an earlier crash on 101 just north of Prunedale, very close to San Juan Road. A couple cars on the right side, no longer blocking any lanes. Traffic is moving fine in the area. 101 north out of Gilroy and Morgan Hill, at the limit up to San Jose and beyond. And Highway 17 northbound and southbound in Santa Cruz and Santa Clara counties, also at the limit. Forecast today, sunny skies, little breezy conditions that we had yesterday afternoon. We'll go back down to about 5 to 10 mile per hour range that will allow temperatures to feel into the lower to middle 70s in many places in Santa Cruz and South Santa Clara County. Is a little bit cooler as per usual around the Monterey Peninsula with some low to mid 60s there. Before we start hour two of the Saturday special with Rebecca Costa filling in for MZ, time for the latest K-Zwirling commentary on KSCO.
The following is a KSCO commentary. Here is K-Zwirling.
This is part of a large commentary that I wrote in March 2008. It's all about the United Nations. The United Nations is after taxes again. They blame the USA and people who could be taxed and leached upon, while their communist friends in China, India, or South Korea can pollute the air all day and all night. Well, the capitalist smoke really bothers them, but not the marijuana smoke, first or second hand. 15,000 global warming jihadists, the environmental activists with their chief alarmist, Al Gore, met in Bali a while ago to urge all nations to hurry up and sign the new treaty. It's like a band of bank robbers. Hurry up before they find out that we have looted them. The media continues to neglect to mention that President Bush will not sign the Kyoto agreements because the world's worst polluters, China and India, are exempt from cleaning up their filth. Who do you think paid for this nice winter vacation for most of the delegates? The UN, from money they collected for the Indonesian tsunami victims. They collected over $1 billion with a B and gave out less than $100 million, so they're having a good time on your donations. The UN also wants to hijack the internet domain registration control from the US so countries like Russia, China, Iran, Venezuela, and others could block internet travel not approved by the dictators. The United Nations, under the LOST Treaty, wants to control the seas all around the world and the minerals and oil in the seabeds, tax the resources, and distribute it among third world countries. The Robin Hoods of New York, the UN, will get a very handsome commission plus the control where our Navy can sail or not sail. We're totally sick of this United Nations mafia. Kudos to you, Zoltan, for shining a light on much of this important information. Isn't it time for we the people to direct our government to resign from the United Nations, which we have tolerated and subsidized for more than 60 years? They routinely veto whatever our U.S. representatives recommend and have leached upon us long enough. Clearly, their agenda is to rule the world. America, please wake up before it's too late. For KSCO, this is Kay Zwirling.
Oh, hello, darling. I hate to hang up on you, but I'm sorry, baby, but I have to go. It's time for that wonderful record show. I'd love to visit, but you'll have to call back. KSCO has the inside track.
Welcome back to the Saturday special. I'm Rebecca Costa, host of the Costa Report here on KSCO every Friday afternoon at 2 p.m., and I'm standing in for your regular host, Michael Zwirling.
I'm sorry, baby, but I really gotta go to KSCO Radio. Bye.
During the first hour, we had an opportunity to hear from one of our country's foremost experts on North Korea, David S. Maxwell. I should say Colonel David S. Maxwell. He was with the Special Forces Unit and also the War College. And I hope you enjoyed him as much as I did. He was an amazing guest and fully informed about the Kim regime. And, you know, I keep bringing this up. I feel like I'm just sounding the alarm that we better pay attention there. And as is typical, we're going to wait until, you know, somebody launches a nuclear weapon and then we'll get on top of it, I suppose. That really bothers me because I think part of leadership is getting out ahead of a problem. And when we have an opportunity to speak to someone who's as knowledgeable about history and the track record of an antagonistic enemy, it clears up a lot of the mythology. You know, I've got Rick here. Rick, Matt, they call you Rick and Matt.
You Either know, one goes. Matt's a middle name.
Now, you know that for months I thought that there were twins here, Rick and Matt.
Yeah, I've had that problem before with people saying, well, who are you? Well, then who's that other guy?
You know, if you were a manipulative male, you would have taken full advantage of the idea that there was twins.
That was my brother.
Yeah, that was my brother. They've done whole movie scripts on that.
I'm not that evil, though.
Yeah, too bad for you.
I wanted to bring up what shows like The Daily Show, how they portray North Korea. Mainly it was with Kim Jong-il, but even now. Are teenagers and 20-somethings not going to take North Korea seriously because they're portrayed as the guy hanging out with Dennis Rodman or wearing the cool sunglasses and the lifts in the shoes? And the real threat that North Korea could pose is almost overshadowed by the joke, using Jon Stewart as an example, who I think is a brilliant and funny man. But as a 16, 17, 18-year-old watching that, are the priorities going to be mixed with North Korea?
I know exactly what you mean. Basically, they're making him out to be a cartoon character. It's hard to take a cartoon character
who really has a finger on a button.
That's correct. Too. Well, it's worse than the cartoon character has a finger on the button. The cartoon character's kid has a finger on the button. And I think that's what Colonel Maxwell's concerned about. I mean, we've got a person who is arrogant, rather adolescent, who's got their finger on the button. And but, you know, I don't know if that bothers me nearly as much as the fact that the U.S. media has just fallen asleep at the wheel. You know, we get all excited about it. I mean, let me just try to contrast this and frame it up. Why I'm on the air and why it disturbs me so much. Because for 2 full days, all we heard about was the White House tours for kids was going to be canceled because of sequestration and how horrible it was. And we heard kids.
The Easter roll.
Yeah, we heard kids coming on the air saying, yes, I saved up for the class field trip and now I can't go to the White House. Okay, so now let's take that story, which ran 24/7 for, you know, 2-3 days. And then now let's contrast that with, a situation in South Korea, which is like, having a nuclear weapon aimed at us from Tijuana. Okay, I don't understand how these judgment calls are made in the media. It's really disturbing to me.
When North Korea comes up on publications like the Huffington Post, it's gaffes on their latest government-issued photoshopped picture.
Or it's a Jon Stewart characterization.
The reality behind what the, you know, they might have photoshopped in an aircraft carrier, but don't think that doesn't exist somewhere in their arsenal.
That's exactly right. And I am just disturbed by the selection and the lack of in-depth coverage, the lack of looking ahead and seeing what's coming. A threat like this, if you've listened to my show, The Costa Report, you know we had Dennis Ross, who has served the State Department and served five administrations in the United States, coming out and saying that we are within 100, 200 days of striking Iran and their enrichment facilities, all right? So, I'm not the O'Reilly Show. I'm not Sean Hannity's audience. I'm not Rush Limbaugh. I don't have Rush Limbaugh's audience across the country. We have a national following, absolutely, and we have a lot of military people that follow this program. But I'm going to tell you right now, we don't have the following that Rush Limbaugh has. And why isn't he talking about this? Why aren't people who have an audience of millions and millions and millions of people across the United States talking about what is down the road? And why are we spending all this time talking about the White House tours have been canceled?
Because 99% of nationally syndicated talk radio are the three V's: vindication, victory speech, and vindication. It's, I predicted this, and it came true.
And this, so listen to everything
correct.
I say?
Yeah, it's the gospel truth, but it's about Easter egg rolls. It's you know, Limbaugh talking about what he predicted 6 months ago, that dingy Harry would do, as he would say, and how he was right. Therefore, he must be right about everything.
You know, this is that dangerous period I talk about in my book, where we become so confused about what empirical facts and data are and what unproven beliefs are, that the society, that every society going back to the Khmer, to the Mayans, to the Romans, reaches a period in which they get this confusion and they become so vulnerable to false prophets, because we can't make a distinction between what is a fact, and so therefore we can't preempt and we can't act rationally. And then public policy starts to become very irrational, and that is the prelude to collapse. And if you want to really look at the pattern, you'll see that gridlock is always followed by a mass confusion between facts and unproven beliefs. That's followed by irrational public policy, and then comes collapse. And that is what I'm really worried about. Well, let's take a couple of phone calls. We're going to take a call from John. John, welcome to the Saturday special. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, Rebecca. Great program again. I think one of the things that there are things being done, if you talk to some of the people at the postgraduate school, these are some of the greatest minds that are in the military. And again, like what you said, pop culture, John Stewart, Lieberwitz, nobody, the youth thinks that he is the guy that's given them news. And again, with the news, what can you do with it? You know, the same thing led up to Vietnam, what they were talking about, what Mr. Kennedy was talking about, what Mr. Johnson was talking about. It's the Armageddon, it's the Russians coming over, they get this, the Chinese are going to come over. It's been the same old thing since the 50s. And again, it isn't going to matter, because you can't do anything about it. Nuclear weapons are nothing to fear, because they won't use them. And the reason they won't use them is it wrecks infrastructure. You know, gases are far more lethal. They're easier to launch. They're easier to bring in. They're easier to set off. Or your biological stuff, much easier to work with. Nuclear stuff destroys, and that destroys infrastructure, and the communists, these other regimes, they don't want to do that.
So what you're saying is that you believe, as much as Korea continues to develop more and more sophisticated nuclear weapons and saber rattle and pose more aggressive verbal threats, they get more and more flamboyant, we should not be worried about that.
I didn't say... how do you mean we? The military?
The United States. The United States. By we, I mean, do you feel that we should be worried, concerned about this? Or are you saying they're never going to use them anyway, so who cares?
No, I believe the United States, that doesn't publicize it, is taking care of it. I listen to a lot of people at the postgraduate school, And that's just one of the little places.
Well, let me just say something here, because I'm so glad you brought up the Naval Postgraduate School, which is one of our finest institutions here on the Monterey Peninsula and in the United States. You know, with the recent sequestration, you know that they were just up in arms, right? If sequestration is allowed to continue down the path that it's passing on, one of the institutions which will be gravely affected is the Naval Postgraduate School. Make no mistake.
Yes, but the sequestration, the percentage of what the amount of money is nothing. It's 0.25% and it's very minimal. And it's spread out so far, it won't matter. And, you know, your comparison of Tijuana with nuclear weapons, mm-hmm. we already did that in Cuba. You know, we did that a long time ago in Cuba. Cuba had missiles being sent down there, as you remember. And we didn't tolerate it.
We didn't tolerate it. We sent our ships right down there.
Not only that, but are you Cuban descent, just for knowing? I always wanted to know. I worked for a guy named... Miguel Acosta, really
no.
a super guy.
No, I'm Italian and Japanese, and my dad used to make a joke that they should have made laws to keep from the Italians and the Japanese from being able to breed.
I ain't gonna go nowhere with that one.
He used to laugh about it. He said he used to laugh and say, "Yeah," he goes, "you got a little bit of that kamikaze blood in you mixed with the Sicilian." He goes, "It's not gonna do you a lot of benefit as you get older." And he was right about
that.
I got that Italian Japanese blood.
Let me put it to you like this: they both make great cars.
Well, thanks, John, for calling in. I appreciate it. Always great to hear from you. All right, we're going to talk to Dick. Dick, welcome to the program.
Oh, yeah, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I appreciated you talking about the nuclear... I'm trying to remember the lady that you had on your last show.
Eleanor Cliff?
Yes, Cliff, Mrs. Cliff. She was talking about how the nukes are kind of ubiquitous now, and, you know, everybody's eventually going to get them, and basically nation-to-nation detente works.
Yeah,
right?
Well, first of all, I mean, I'm so glad you brought up my interview with Eleanor Cliff, because that was a rough interview. She is a tough lady. But second of all, you know, a lot of people confuse my own opinions and my own views with my guests. So if I get a Grover Norquist on or a Papukan, and, you know, everybody on the left is all up in arms, you know, you're a Republican, how dare you? And if I have Ralph Nader on, then everybody's all mad at me on the right. So, you know, there's no winning. But yeah, she did say some things that basically, from a nuclear weapons standpoint, everybody's going to have them anyways. Didn't you get that impression?
That's what I just said. I agree. I mean, I think that's a pretty accurate statement. And the Iran, you know, and Korea Peninsula problem, I think we're making it a problem, and we have been for years. And I think also it goes back to historic perspective of just war and economics, because you know, a lot of wars, you know, there's lots of money involved in wars, so. And right now, I just wanted to make one other point, really, is, well, actually two. Things have changed from that ubiquitous model, and I think it has changed in the 70s, so it's been going on for a while, and it's called a suitcase nuke. And there hasn't been one that has gone off. So I guess the Israelis do have to worry about that the most, because you can sneak them in, or, you know, drive them in, or walk them in.
You're absolutely right about that. Well, let's go back to your earlier comment about, you know, wars are good for the economy. I don't know if everybody really understands that a war acts like an Uber consumer. Suddenly, you need everything from weapons that you're destroying, tanks you're destroying, uniforms you're destroying. There is no quicker way to create jobs and get the economy back on its feet.
Break it and then rebuild it.
That's right. Then the mass destruction that war brings about, and it creates an artificial demand for products.
Well, that's just it. In the nature of things, it's not artificial. This has been going on through history for years and years.
Yeah, but it would be interesting to know if we could, if we have an economy that's strong enough to stand on its two feet when we don't have to destroy products.
That's my last point, Rebecca, is that right now, I mean, we're basically on a 10-year downslide or holding our own with economics. So 10 years now, we've been printing money. You know, the deficit is just blowing up with no end in sight. Nobody's controlling costs, and the only way you're going to keep the dollar strong is you're going to have to go to war.
So in if I use your model, right, which I'm not saying is wrong, by the way, for people that are listening, I mean, I hope they're paying attention to what you're saying, because what you're saying is very profound. I hope listeners are paying attention here. What you're saying is if our economy can't stand on its own without a war as an Uber consumer now, the fact that we're on a long downward slide in terms of debt, we're going to be even having to go to more wars.
Yeah. It goes both sides of the aisle. It's big business, and at this point, I think it's desperation. So I would say, yes, 200 days we'll be in Iran. And from that point on, there's going to be a lot of problems after that happens.
What about North Korea? Do you think we're going to strike in North Korea, or does that just create nuclear Armageddon with China?
No. We're not going to have nuclear Armageddon. We're going to have localized. It'll be a localized, controlled, well orchestrated by those in charge. There's never going to be an all and all out, you know, fire and let them all fly. But, you know, the reason why Korea is in such dire straits is because of all of our, you know, we've been holding them down in Iran. We've been trying to hold them down. Mm-hmm. And so they hate us more and more, and they get their people to hate us. That's the most important thing. They get the people behind the government. And then we're losing footholds in different places, and then we'd have to make up the difference. Like we still have a certain contingency in South Korea, but at some point they'll feel bold enough, or they'll be forced through all our restrictions on their economy. And if China cuts them off, then they'll really be desperate.
What'd you think about Maxwell's suggestion that what we need to do is reinforce our military presence in South Korea, because it's the only thing North Korea will respond to?
I think we should keep a strong presence there if we want to keep the peace. And but in addition, we should restrict the we should let up on all the economic restrictions on North Korea and try to open up dialogue and sit down with them. But that isn't going to happen, just like in Iran. What's happening is that we have an incredible deficit. The United States is losing its first world, you know, military and economic strength, or status, I should say. Mm-hmm. They're losing it. So we're gonna
have to go ahead and let these wars happen, because we need them from an economic standpoint. You know, you make a good point, and it's a sobering one, and I don't think it's actually incorrect. I do worry about this. I worry about the number of wars that we're going to be participating in order to create this Uber consumer. But unfortunately, it backfires, because it always winds up costing us more, right, than we wind up making. And it's kind of a deadly treadmill.
Well, you know, there's points, there's inflection points in history. And then something pops, you know. And economics is a real, real strong, what would you call it in engineering terms? It's empirical strength, and that inflection point is the strongest right now. And I think if you looked at other times in history, that's been shown to happen. And we're in a very unique time, because if our 10-year Treasury notes went from 1.9, which they are now, to the historic level of, I think it's 6.9,
mm-hmm.
yeah,
mm-hmm.
our interest payments just on the debt service would be 50% of all revenues. So the interest rates will never rise. They can't, or our country will go under.
Well, you know what? Every time, here's the thing, though. I don't disagree with you, and you're so bright, and you really have thought this out. I love talking to you about this. But here's the problem I have. Every time I think that if that happens, you know, the interest rates go up, we're toast. We owe so much money, we can't possibly dig out of that hole. And then we come up with some new clever financial instrument or, you know what I mean? Like, it's like the mortgage guys, you know, all right, there's no way they can get out of this subprime mortgage thing. True. And then they go, well, now we have this new kind of home loan.
They
and
slip the cuffs off again.
Yeah, they slip the cuffs off and then they go, oh, yeah, well, the subprime thing didn't work, but we have these new kinds of home loans now. And they sit down and I think, just when I think we're all done and down for the count, they come up with some new financial thing that's so complicated and so bizarre, and it works for. But here's the trick, and I don't want to put out false hope there. But here's the trick: it works for a very short amount of time.
Yeah, well,
and then you're stuck with the problem again.
You know, I would say we're at that inflection point also because the QE 1, 2, 3. Through the Federal Reserve, and I don't know what we're on now. We're $85 billion a month.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's, you know, it's some of those questions you should have asked Ms. Cliff about. it's historical. It's a hockey puck chart. It's going. We've never been here before with that type of, there's nobody to buy our bonds anymore. China stopped virtually.
Yeah, but we're going to come up with something else. You just know it, right? You just know it. You feel it in your... I mean, no one will buy our bonds, so now we're going to invent something else. I don't know what it's going to be, but listen, Dick, I got to go to a commercial break. I'm already now.
Thanks so much
for calling in the program. You really made the second hour here and gave us a lot to talk about and a lot to think about. We're going to take a short commercial break, and we'll be right back.
Howdy, folks. My name is Mickey Phelps, and I'm the executive chef of Crown Cafe Deli. It's getting cold outside, so why don't you stop by for a nice warm cup of soup or a nice winter fresh salad? Wow, let me tell you, this winter fresh salad has spring mix, cranberries, blue cheese, and glazed pecans. This is sure to satisfy your needs. Also, don't forget that we have an amazing selection of hot and cold sandwiches. For example, the Brit, which is a roast beef and horseradish. We also offer every sandwich on gluten-free bread. And if you're looking for a nice dinner to go, stop by and get the tri-tip dinner with mashed potatoes and veggies. Crown Cafe is located at the Brown Ranch Marketplace in Capitola, between Bed Bath & Beyond and Trader Joe's. For more information, please call 831-475-475 5992 or on the web at crowncafecatering.com.
There are many ways to sell vehicles these days, but at Watsonville Cadillac Buick GMC, there's only one way. Hello, I'm Todd Millsluggle, owner of Watsonville Cadillac Buick GMC. I'm on the lot almost every day to make certain you can buy a vehicle the old-fashioned way, small town, friend-to-friend way, with low prices, friendly, dependable service. I have a special invitation for all of you considering a new car or truck. Before you purchase any vehicle, visit Watsonville Cadillac Buick GMC and drive our all-new line of Buicks and GMCs. You will say what everybody who visits says, wow.
Wow is right.
Test drive one of our all-new
2013 Buick LaCrosse fitted at 25 mpg city and 36 mpg highway.
Visit Watsonville Cadillac Buick GMC and test drive one of our all-new Cadillac Buick or GMC vehicles. I guarantee you will be happy you did. On Auto Row in Watsonville and on the web at WatsonvilleGM.com. We are Watsonville Cadillac Buick GMC.
Have a T, we're going to do 25 now, 50 now, 75, we're going to go 300, 325, 350, 375, we're going to go 400, 425, 450. Imagine finding an old painting, or chair, or fishing lure while rummaging through the attic. Is it junk, or is it hidden treasure? Hello, I'm Rob Slowinski of Slowinski Auctions and Appraisers in Scotts Valley. Before you throw that item out,
you better make certain it's not hidden treasure. And the way to do that is to join me at 2 p.m. Saturday afternoon here at KSCO for Hidden Treasures Radio Show. Put that item on the table in front of you and call the show. We'll figure out what that item is, where it came from, what it's worth, give or take. So don't throw that item out. Instead, join me, Rob Slowinski of Slowinski Auction Company, Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m. for Hidden Treasures Radio Show. Is it junk or is it hidden treasure?
From San Jose to Salinas, Red Hot News Talk, AM 1080, KSCO Santa Cruz.
Welcome back to the Saturday special. It's Rebecca Costa, and I am sitting in for MZ, who is taking a much-deserved holiday out on the beaches of our 50th state. I hope he's tuning in and listening to the program. And he's probably, I just picture him with a nice tall drink with an umbrella in it and floating around on a blow-up raft. And nope, he's probably at work in his room. He is one of the hardest working guys I know. Well, we've been talking about North Korea and the North Korea threat today. And one of the things I really want to bring to everyone's attention is how these embargoes, these economic embargoes, have in a very unanticipated sort of way have backfired. Because the worse that the North Korean economy gets, the more they get strangled, the more desperate they become to get some kind of economy going. And the only products they have to export at this point that have any value and any potential to fund an entire nation are nuclear weapons and parts for nuclear weapons. So we have to understand what the repercussions, you know, everybody always says, well, we don't want to go to war. We don't want to do this. We don't want to do it. We want to rely on economic embargoes. But we have to understand that prolonged economic embargoes cause a country to become very desperate, and desperate nations are volatile and dangerous. And this is exactly what has happened. So it's kind of backfired on us to the point where now they're doing product demos and trying to drum up business. And we're in a position where even if we go and we take out the enrichment facilities at Iran, or we try to put the lid on the box of other development of nuclear facilities, because look, there's two ways you can get nuclear weapons, right? You can create your own sort of Manhattan Project and fund it and hire some scientists and move forward. Very costly, takes a long time to do it. Or you can go buy. So you have the same decisions that any CEO of any corporation has. And you know what the decision is. It's make or buy. You're either going to make something or you're going to buy it. You're not going to make desks and chairs. You're going to go buy those from somebody else. And Iran and every other country in the world has to make that decision. We're going to buy arms and weapons, or we're going to make them homegrown. And when we take out Iran's nuclear facilities, which there's been a lot of talk about happening between now and the end of the year, a couple hundred days, that decision will get made. We have to understand that that doesn't do anything to stop Iran. You can take out their little mini Manhattan projects all day long, and it will not stop them, because they have been buying arms from North Korea since the 1980s. And they will just start buying parts. That's what's going to happen. They're not going to ship big old nuclear missiles over there. They're going to just start selling them the parts that they need and the technology they need. I think I'm right about this, and we talked to a lot of experts on the Costa Report, and we heard one today in the first hour. But you know what? We're going to take a call from Thomas, and Thomas will straighten me out. Thomas, how you doing?
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice if we could straighten things out?
I want you to straighten me out. So, what's on your mind today?
Well, the first thing I want to say shortly is I trade and have been trading in the financial markets for at least 10 years, not 12 years, actively, daily sometimes. And I am in a trading school, and in that trading school there's a former banker from New York who was a liaison to Washington, D.C., and he teaches us a lot of times about world economics according to him. And one of the things he taught us in relation to what your last caller said was, yes, there's a tremendous amount of interest on our bonds,
But right now, all of our bonds are being purchased by the Federal Reserve. And also, that interest is paid back to the United States except for expenses to the Federal Reserve, operating expenses, and maybe another small amount. So it's kind of a misnomer that interest is a big problem because it's paid back to the United States government in a large
way. How does he know that?
Well, because he was a banker in New York who at one point, for some of the major largest banks in the nation, and at one point he was the liaison between, you know, Washington, D.C., the government, and those banks. And so in that
Maybe somebody will call in and correct me on this, but the Federal Reserve has not had to disclose any of their profits or their operations. I believe there's been a lawsuit that's been filed against the Federal Reserve on the behalf of some American citizens, some very powerful American citizens that want that disclosure to take place. So we don't really know. And with all due respect to this individual that you're talking about, we don't really know what the arrangement is with the Federal Reserve and what they are and are not paying.
Well, I'm not going to dispute that we don't really know, and maybe that has never happened, but I, in my work in the market, I listened to every word Ben Bernanke said at the last time he sat before the Senate and the House of Representatives.
Mm-hmm.
And he even mentioned in the questions from the senators and the House of Representatives, whichever it was, he said in the statements and in response to one of the questions, and you realize, Senator, we pay interest, the vast majority of the money in interest on these bonds back to the U.S. government. We have and we will again. So it's not the problem you're making it out to be. He stated that on television publicly.
Yes.
In front of everybody.
Yes.
Now, is he lying?
No, I don't think he's lying. I don't know what the situation is now. I mean, that was quite a while ago when Ben Bernanke made that statement. I think that was several years ago.
No, it was a couple of weeks ago.
It
was a couple of weeks ago because I listened. He sat before. I'm in the markets every day.
I'm not aware of him making that statement. I know he made that statement actually several years ago. He was testifying and he made that statement that the bonds that are purchased from the Federal Reserve are not free. I mean, that they're paying the government interest. So maybe he was just restating himself. It sounds like he's stating the obvious, though, because with any bonds, you're not, I mean, you're paying some interest on any bonds that you purchase, right?
Well, the point is that everybody has this, what I think, a misconceived notion that we owe a big, massive debt and interest to the Federal Reserve. We don't, because they give the vast majority of it back to the U.S. government. That's how it's set up. Now,
that's a good point. That is an important point.
Yeah, it is. And if it's not true, I'd like to know it. But my banker tells me it's true. I've heard Ben Bernanke say it in front of God and everybody in the nation. So let's find out if it's not true, because if it's not true, then everybody's blowing all this smoke about something that's not true.
Well, I think the point that the guest was making in the first hour was that there's no market for our bonds. And when you have the Federal Reserve buying up all the bonds because nobody else wants to buy them, it's kind of, I mean, wouldn't you agree that's sort of a problem?
Well, that leads to my second point,
mm-hmm.
with the conversation you had with the last gentleman. Yes, in my understanding, by observing the markets and listening to people and listening to this teacher in our school, we're in desperate, desperate straits. We are hanging on by a thread. That's my opinion from everything that I've observed, and I try to listen and observe. I don't have another job. That's what I do. I got disabled, and so I pay attention, and I'm a fairly bright person. I'm maybe not the top of the pile, but we're in desperate, desperate straits. We're hanging on by a thread. What Ben Bernanke and the Fed is doing is keeping us from a massive depression. That's my opinion. And that kind of goes along with the last thing your caller said. And he stretched this out over 10 years or decades, whatever he said, I don't quite remember, which brings me to my next point.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe what we just said, and then we're not thinking a little deeper about what we just said. What right do we have to say anything to Korea if because we're in such desperate straits economically that we have to go to war and lie ourselves into wars to get out of our economic problems? What right do we have to say anything to anybody in the world, for God's sake, and then send our children to church, send ourselves to church every Sunday, and do what we just agreed we've probably been doing? What right do we have to say anything to Korea, to Iran, to anybody?
Well, I don't know what right we have. I mean, you know, that there's one side of the political argument that says we have no business trying to police everyone else. You know, what is that saying? There's a saying about you better take care of the business in your own house before you go out and worry about everybody else. And so, but that's a very almost isolationist attitude. And we have to be careful because we're really so interdependent in terms of the global economy that while the language sounds right to say, well, we better take care of business at home because we're not doing so well that we can go out and lecture everybody else on how they ought to run their affairs. It's a little bit dangerous because the world we live in doesn't lend itself to an isolationist kind of mentality, and that's a little bit why guys like Ron Paul get attacked all the time. You know, he says, look, we shouldn't have troops anywhere. Where are we under threat? Why do we have air bases in Germany? You know, he's the first to kind of point out why are we in everybody else's business when we wouldn't tolerate them being in our business for 10 minutes? And I think that's the point you're making, isn't it?
Well, it is definitely a point I'm making, but I wanted to go on from what you just said. What could we do? And I'm not advocating an isolationist philosophy. There's a woman on a gentleman who we both, I don't know about you, but sometimes I agree with the gentleman on at night on KSCO, and sometimes I think he's a bit of a lunatic. But he had a woman on there called Catherine Austin Fitz, mm-hmm. who worked for the Federal Reserve, who worked for the last guy in the Federal Reserve. And I've heard her talk about the fact, and she's a top, top economist. You don't work for, who was the last Fed chief? Do you remember?
After Bernanke? Or before Bernanke?
Yeah.
Alan Greenspan. Yeah, Alan Greenspan.
Alan Greenspan. Okay, yeah. Catherine Austin Fitz worked for him.
Worked for Alan Greenspan.
Yes. And so she.
You got to be really smart to work for him.
That's my point.
Yeah.
She was is a top economist in the world, and she's been on Alex Jones' show laying out a plan, and she swears economically we could make it in the capitalist system economically with another system that we have, meaning without a system where we depend on wars. What would happen? We spend $1 trillion on Iraq, right, on the war in Iraq. We lied ourselves into that war. Nobody's going to convince me otherwise. Bush, in my opinion, should be in The Hague. And we spent $1 trillion on that war. What if we spent that $1 trillion? What if we sat down and talked to Saddam Hussein, talked to the head of Iran, talked to the head of Korea, sat down, admitted what we've done wrong for the last 40 or 50 years, and took that $1 trillion and said, look, we got $1 trillion here. We decided we're not going to blow up 100,000 or 300,000 year people. We decide we're going to do something called cooperate. Let's make this a better world for all of us. Let's quit this prehistoric thing of blowing the hell out of each other and spend $1 trillion figuring out how to cooperate, how to help each other.
Well, now, I want to say to you, Thomas, that I don't think there's a person listening to the radio that doesn't agree with you that would be a wonderful option. But it's really, really, really hard to talk to someone who wants to kill you.
Let's talk about that, Rebecca. Why do they want to kill us?
It doesn't matter why, though. Here's the point I want to make. I know where you're going to go with this. Let me hedge you off at the pass here because I'm going to have to take a break in just a moment. But let me hedge you off at the pass because I think I know where you're going to go with this. You're going to say that, look, we do a lot of things to earn that hate. Okay, and I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt and say, all right, we did lots of things to earn that hate. But even if that's the case, when you're sitting down across the table with somebody who wants to kill you, who has said, my goal is to kill you, is to wipe you off the face of the earth, it's hard to have a friendly conversation and say, hey, let's cooperate.
You know, I'd like to respond to that. I know you have to go, but...
Oh, wait a minute. What happened? Now, I did not cut you off, but somehow your phone call dropped off.
Oh, he's back now.
There you go, Thomas. Sorry. I didn't want you to give you the impression I cut you off. Go ahead. Continue.
Okay, I'd like to respond to that. First of all, from a number of articles that I've read and that I could Google and find right now, the government of Iran didn't say that. That's a mistranslation of what he said, first and foremost. So that could be dispelled, in my opinion. He didn't say he wants to wipe Israel off the face of the map. The translation was something else. More to the less, what I understand was that he was opposed to certain leaders in the Israeli government, and he wanted them out. Well, he wanted them out because they're continually threatening him. If somebody wasn't continually threatening him, maybe he wouldn't say he wants to get rid of those leaders, not wipe Israel off the map. My second point is, if that person is saying that, then I want Mr. Obama or Mr. Bush or Mr. Kucinich, who would have been a better man to do it, go on worldwide television, sit down with them and talk, and let us all listen to the honest conversation.
Ooh, I like that. I like that. I like a live broadcast of the negotiations with no moderator, no Candy Crowley sticking her hand in there. You know, that's what I like. I love that idea. And on that note, Thomas, I'm way late on a break here, and I'm going to be killed by my boss here, so I got to go. But thanks so much for calling in. I really appreciate it. We're going to take a real quick commercial break.
This is Susan Pappas from the True Olive Connection. I want to personally invite you to come on down to try our heart-healthy olive oils and balsamic vinegars. For your special someone, try the Persian lime and coconut balsamic over fruit salad for a tropical night to remember, or the blood orange and dark chocolate balsamic for a special sweet surprise. How about breakfast in bed with our maple balsamic and butter olive oil combination? Can you say sticky sweet? Try something new, like our new melt-away chocolate bars made with our olive oil and balsamic vinegars, or try our locally infused raw honey or infused scented hand soaps. Did you know that our raw, organic coconut oil and olive oil are as much fun in the bedroom as they are in the kitchen? Oh, my. The True Olive Connection is choice for a new sexy experience you won't forget. Visit us at 106 Lincoln Street, downtown Santa Cruz, or online at trueoliveconnection.com. Like us on Facebook for fresh recipes and ideas. Visit us at 106 Lincoln Street, downtown Santa Cruz. Here's to staying happy and healthy.
Oppa!
There's a reason our sales are way up at North Bay Ford here in Santa Cruz. Put simply, we've got the best deals on the best vehicles. Hello, I'm Bobby Robinson. North Bay Ford is your locally owned dealership with low overhead, friendly, small town values, and great deals on new cars, trucks, and RVs. Get this, Bobby's Deal of the Week at North Bay Ford.
Get the most from every gallon of gas with a North Bay Ford Fuel Saver Service Package for your car or truck. North Bay Ford service technicians will change your oil and all your filters, check your tires and alignment, examine your brakes, and make certain all of your vehicle systems are optimized to get the most from every gallon of gas. Save money. Call North Bay Ford and make an appointment for a Ford Fuel Saver Service Package.
When you need an economical focus for your college student, a new Explorer for Sunday drives, or a fleet of powerful F-350s for your Berry Ranch, look first to your friends and neighbors at locally owned North Bay Ford, 1999 Soquel Avenue, Santa Cruz, or on the web at northbayford.com.
Developing good policies. Good policies keep a business moving down the road to profitability. These policies include a mission statement, compensation plan, performance evaluations, and employee protocols, and are often part of a larger business plan. To develop your good business plan, get as much input as you can from key employees and advisors. Next, communicate your policies clearly and concisely to everyone in your business. Finally, review your policies and business plan on a regular basis and revise them as necessary. These will do a lot of the work for you, so you can spend more time keeping your customers happy. You can find good examples of policies and procedures and business plans from your business association or by searching the net.
For free assistance for your small business, contact the Central Coast Small Business Development Center at Cabrillo College at 831-479-6136.
Why talk when you can argue?
News Talk 1080 KSCO.
Welcome back to the Saturday special, and I'm Michael Zwirling. Nope, that's not right. Michael Zwirling's on the line all the way from Hawaii. How you doing, MZ?
That would be wonderful if you were Michael L. Zwirling. It would be
such an honor. And a
what are you doing calling in? I portrayed you on a rubber raft drinking a drink with an umbrella in it. What are you doing? You're working,
yeah,
aren't you?
But then you said I was no, I was working my bleep off, and you were
You are one of the hardest working people I know. So
here's what's happening here. First of all, we're 3 hours behind, so I thought I would tune in and hear, because I knew you'd do a great job on the Saturday special, Rebecca.
Ah, shucks.
And I did at the end of the first hour, and I heard you tease the audience about, I got so many angry emails after you were on the last time with me on the Saturday special. Was that 2 weeks ago or whatever it was?
Yeah, I tried to put that out of my mind.
No, you didn't, because you did a tease. You did a tease at the end of last hour, and I said, oh, boy, I'm happy I remembered to tune in here and got the times right, because we're going to have a really exciting second hour. Not that we haven't. It was a very cerebral second hour with a lot of good stuff, you know, that you never hear too much, you know, on KSCO. But what happened to all the callers?
I think they forgave me. This is my theory, MZ. I think they forgave me. Here's what I got going for me. Time. It's a lot of things I say to people, they really get annoyed or they get really emotional or energized by it. But then over time, one of the things I got going for me is I'm a biologist, and I can tell you the body cannot sustain that level of adrenaline and aggression for any prolonged period of time. So what I love about it is...
Probably why when people get all fired up about something that's happening.
Can
you still hear me?
I can.
Yeah, my sister Regina is calling me, and she doesn't know that she's interrupting the entertainment of thousands of people here. That's what always happens. No one calls me except when I'm on the air on the telephone.
Of course. So do you think all those people that were upset about our discussion about gun control have forgiven me and now think I'm not so bad?
No, I don't think they've forgiven you, but I do think you're right on about not being able to sustain that level of aggression or anger. And so it's sort of the same idea about when you're trying to bring to light, you know, some injustice like the Drake's Bay Oyster Farm, you know, controversy. You know, it's not right what they're doing to those people. Although I have seen some emails just this morning say that there is some light here. People are jumping on but you get people all agitated on talk radio and then they're done. Because you won't give up here. Then they're done, and they go and,
they calm down.
They calm down and they go on to couch potatoing and belching and farting, you know?
Well, I don't know if that's really what happens. I think, you know, listen, one of the great things about KSCO is we have a really engaged listenership. You know, they listen to the news, they read, they're really intelligent. I mean, you heard the callers in the last hour.
Well, you know that that's by design. We refuse to permit unintelligent people from listening to the station, and we vigorously enforce that rule.
Well, you and I'll have to have a conversation about that.
But we
have a very intelligent listenership, and I know even on my program I get some of my best leads for research articles, information from callers who email me. And they'll point me in the right direction, and I'm shocked. They're my best source for getting facts from fiction. I gotta know, how's your vacation going? What's it like over there in Hawaii?
It's at the moment it's sort of overcast and very. Yesterday I walked way farther than I should have in Honolulu, but it's very nice. I mean, what can I say? The food is fantastic here. There's always an adventure every day. It's sort of boring, you know, crossing the ocean here, but that's when I'll get to work, you know, writing commercials and stuff that I should be doing all the time.
Right. Well, I'm going to tell you, we miss you here. So hurry on.
Oh,
yeah.
What a nice thing to say.
I'll be killed by all my peers here, but we kind of miss you around the station. So hurry on back.
So, but everybody, you think everybody's forgiven you? Well, that's good. That makes me feel good.
I think so. I didn't get any death threats during the second hour, so maybe everybody calmed down about that Second Amendment issue.
Yeah.
One can always hope.
Enough already.
All right, Z. We're getting ready to wrap up the Saturday special, and as I understand it, will you be back here next week, or will that be a substitute host?
No, I believe Rich Lieberman will be sitting in your seat next week, but I should be back.
That'll be a fun ride.
The next day or two after that. Yeah, now talk about another controversial person.
Yeah, you bet, you bet. Well, maybe all those people that were hating me will call Rich Lieberman instead. We'll just reroute them.
Great, Rebecca. Hey, thanks very much.
All right, thanks so much. You have a great vacation, and it was great to talk to Z. I'm Rebecca Costa, and I have enjoyed sitting in for MZ this week. But most of all, I have enjoyed your participation on today's program. Thank you so much for being with us. And now the news.
KSCO Santa Cruz.
I'm Pam Coulter. There's a new development in the investigation of the killing of the head of Colorado's prison system, CBS's Lee Frank.
Evidence from Texas where Evan Ebel died after a shootout chase gives investigators what they call a strong lead, enough to now call the 28-year-old parolee a suspect. Gun casings found in Texas are the same brand and caliber used in the killing of Colorado's corrections director and possibly in the murder of a pizza delivery man.
Still no word on a motive for the shootings. It's still a wintry scene in Colorado, and the third storm in a month is expected to dump up to a foot of snow in the Midwest this weekend. National Weather Service forecaster Bob Orovec.
The storm is affecting a pretty large area of the country with heavy snows from eastern Colorado into parts of northern Kansas and southern Nebraska.
The storms caused flight delays at Denver Airport, and some roads are closed as the storm moves east. A former Kremlin insider turned Putin critic has died in London. CBS's Larry Miller with the story.
Billionaire Russian exile Boris Berezovsky is the latest Kremlin opponent to be found dead in Britain. It's not yet known how the 67-year-old critic of Russian President Vladimir Putin died, yet British media reports he committed suicide. Berezovsky survived a number of assassination attempts and has lived in the UK since 2000. He was a close friend of former KGB agent and Kremlin critic Alexander Litvinenko, who was poisoned in London in 2006 with radioactive material. Larry Miller, CBS News, London.
Michael Dell's plan to take his computer company private, a deal worth about $24 billion, is facing some competition. CBS News and CNET technology analyst Larry Magid.
There very likely could be a bidding war for Dell, and it may turn out that Michael Dell at the end does own a big piece of the company that he founded, or he could be forced out of the picture. There is a plan in place for Mr. Dell and an equity partner to take the company private, but that's now being challenged.
The Wall Street Journal reported buyout specialist Blackstone Group and investor Carl Icahn both notified the Dell board of their interest. An investigation continues into what caused a 300-plus-pound sign at the Birmingham airport to fall on a family yesterday, killing a 10-year-old boy. Larry Snyder tried to help.
Everybody was scattering to lift it up. I helped lift it up and help pull people out.
The boy's mother is in critical condition. It sounds like the TV show Star Trek.
Its never-ending mission is to seek out new tax forms, to explore strange new regulations.
But it's a pricey training video made by the IRS.
This type of thing is not going to go over too well with some members of Congress and some Americans, especially as tax time comes. Americans are getting ready to pay their taxes, and we're facing sequestration when federal agencies have argued in some cases that there really is no fat to cut.
CBS's Cheryl Atkinson. Two videos made by the agency cost $60,000. This is CBS News.
Quietus contains homeopathic ingredients traditionally used to provide relief.
Do you have constant ringing in your ears? Does it drive you crazy? Maybe you hear that buzzing and it drowns out what other people are saying? It's impossible to focus. That ringing is the last thing you hear before you go to sleep. Let me guess. You're hearing that ringing right now. Millions of people suffer from tinnitus, that constant ringing in the ear. Now there's relief. It's called Quietus. Thousands of people have used Quietus to stop ringing in the ear, to stop that hissing sound. You'll love it. You won't have to ask people to repeat themselves. You won't have to sleep with loud fans. Finally, you'll be able to enjoy some peace and quiet. If you're suffering from tinnitus, I urge you to try Quietus.
Call right now for your risk-free trial of Quietus at 1-800-485-4617. That's 1-800-485-4617. Stop the ringing now. 1-800-485-4617. That's 1-800-485-4617.
Some students are giving up spring break hard partying for hard work.
Ah, spring break.
What a magic place, y'all!
But not all young people spend it drinking on the beach. Meet Amy Roden, high schooler in Des Moines, Iowa.
I love this organization. It's doing such great things.
She spent spring break with other young volunteers packing 750,000 meals.
Sent them to Haiti and all the other places that are really in desperate need of meals.
And many help people in areas close to home, too. Dave Bradley runs the nonprofit group that did it.
This was thrown together pretty quickly over a four-week period.
A rewarding, if not relaxing, spring break. Steve Kathan, CBS News.
The gun safety movement has a high-profile supporter. Yoko Ono's issued a stream of Twitter postings against gun violence, including a photo of the blood-stained glasses worn by John Lennon when he was killed. The former Beatles widow says over a million people have been killed by guns in the U.S. since Lennon was shot in 1980. Pam Coulter, CBS News.
KSCO News Time, 12:05. It's Saturday, March 23rd. I'm Rick O'Shea with a traffic and weather update. We start out on Highway 9, northbound close to Teeth Drive. Reports of a two-car crash in the road. Motorcyclists involved in this as well. One car off the road into a ditch. Happened just after 11:30 this morning. Traffic slow. Highway 9 there again. Teeth Drive. One northbound is below the limit from 41st Avenue into the construction at La Fonda. Southbound one heavy as well between Morrissey and Soquel. As you wrap around the Monterey Bay, Highway 1 at the limit south of Castroville into Monterey and Carmel. 68 slow a little bit at the 218 connection. Forecast today, plenty of sunshine. The wind that kept temperatures below, a little bit cooler, not quite below normal, but cooler yesterday, have subsided today, so temperatures will feel in the upper 60s into the 70s in many areas, a little bit cooler.